What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. And as I leave you every week, I ask in the offseason, Dave Dombrowski and the Phillies front office, give us something to talk about. And man, they've given us a lot to talk about this week. So very excited to get to, you know, discussing all the moves that have gone on over the past week and some other news as well. Of course, we will get to Adolis Garcia right away. We will get to Brad Keller right away, who I'm very excited about. Definitely going to touch on those two a lot in the pod. Get to some other rumors that are going on. Potential reliever that might be out or headed out from the organization. So we will touch on that as well. And a big loss in the front office in Ani Colombi being hired by the Washington Nationals as their GM at the age of 31, which is pretty incredible. And I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here at the age of 25 talking to you on the podcast, and Ani Colombi is the GM of the Washington Nationals. So good for him. Pretty incredible. We will get to that later on. But we got to talk about the moves that the Phillies made this week, which a couple of them, definitely a couple of interesting names that have been added to the roster. And you have Adolis Garcia, who we will start off with first, considering he is probably going to be the more, you know, impactful move on a day-to-day basis, although I am much more excited about Brad Keller. So definitely going to look forward to touching on him more as the podcast goes along here. But the Phillies do sign Adolis Garcia to a one-year, $10 million contract, essentially the Max Kepler deal all over again, as he will be the right fielder for the Phillies once Nick Castellanos is out of here, which seems pretty or very inevitable at this point. We're just sort of waiting for teams to, you know, if they're not going to line up to get Nick Castellanos, which obviously they're not, how much are the Phillies going to have to pay to get off of him, or are they going to attach a prospect to get off of him without paying that $20 million? That's going to be the big question with Nick Castellanos. But it is no question that Adolis Garcia is going to be the right fielder for the Phillies in 2026. So I think it's interesting from a couple of perspectives. Obviously, I don't think you can expect to get the Adolis Garcia that we saw in 2023 with the Texas Rangers as they went on to go win the World Series, you know, behind him winning ALCS MVP and having an epic World Series and just overall postseason there as well. Clearly, that was sort of him at the peak of his powers, and he was crucial for them winning that World Series title. And I'm not expecting that player to be here in Philadelphia, considering the drop-off that we've seen in the last couple of years offensively. If you want to talk about it from an offensive standpoint, just in terms of numbers, like Nick Castellanos did put up better numbers last year in terms of average, on base, homers, all of that, than Adolis Garcia did. So from that perspective, I can see why fans might be thinking this is sort of a run-it-back move, which I don't necessarily disagree with. I think of it as sort of not maybe a Nick Castellanos replacement, but more of a Max Kepler replacement in terms of that one-year deal, to where you're going to give a guy a shot to bounce back and be an everyday player and sort of be a middle-of-the-lineup type of guy for you that can pop a homer every time he's up at the plate. So I think it's interesting from that point of view, but what I think is sort of the best part of the signing here is the defense that you're getting in right field. He is, if you look at his Baseball Savant page, clearly a plus-plus defender. He had a down year in 2024, I believe, because he was a little banged up, was dealing with something, a knee injury there. So only down year defensively was 2024. But last year, I believe he was like 12 outs above average or was somewhere up among the league leaders with the right field in right field. So I think that what he's going to bring defensively is going to be very important, considering that Nick Castellanos is one of the least valuable defensive players in all of baseball last year and just throughout the course of his Phillies tenure. And I'm going to look forward to not having to watch that night in and night out and just not have the range that you would typically have as a right fielder. And with Adolis Garcia, like, for the first time since probably Jason Worth, maybe you could argue Dominic Brown, they have somebody with a hose out there in right field that is going to be able to, you know, gun runners down at second, third, home, whatever. And it's going to be pretty exciting to be able to see that. And similar to the Harrison Bader factor that they got last year at the deadline, like, Adolis Garcia has got some juice. He is a guy who plays with a ton of energy, obviously wears his emotions on his sleeve, and is somebody who I think fans are going to appreciate his style of play on a night-in, night-out basis. And we'll get to the negatives now. A lot of swing and miss. Doesn't walk a lot. Like, on base was 270-something last year, which is abysmal. Like, Nick Castellanos was around 300, which, frankly, you would take out of Adolis Garcia next year, him having a 300 OBP, which isn't great. So, and for a guy who, frankly, is a career, you know, I think last year had a 650 OPS, like the fact that he was, his OBP was 270 something shows that he does have some power in there. So the power is sort of the redeeming factor in all of this offensively, but the on base isn't there. And for him to potentially be the number four hitter on this team, and we're going to get to all the other possibilities in a second here, I don't love it. Like, I don't love him potentially protecting Bryce Harper or Kyle Schwarber. Now, they may flip-flop Bryce and Kyle Schwarber and have Bryce bat second and Schwarber bat third this year just so Bryce can finally get a little bit of protection if they don't end up making another move. But I don't love the idea of Adolis Garcia having to protect them in the four spot there. So maybe they go back to Alec Boehm if he ends up on the team. I feel like with Alec Boehm, I'm not going to believe that he's not going to be a Philly until I actually see it or until the notification comes up my phone that he's been traded somewhere else. But those are pretty much the two options that you have to hit behind, you know, your big bats there. So I don't love the idea of that. I would like the Adolis Garcia signing much more if he was hitting sixth in the lineup or he was down in the lineup a little bit more. So we'll see how the rest of the offseason plays out. And, you know, if they end up acquiring another big bat, I'm sort of going to get to that talk after I talk about Brad Keller here, because I'm so excited about Brad Keller. But I'm intrigued by the Adolis Garcia move and just bringing him in as a potential reclamation project, similar to Max Kepler last year, which obviously did not work out. But I think he is somebody that can provide something for this team, whether it's defense, whether it's attitude, whether it's just a spark towards the bottom of the lineup, hopefully if they bring in somebody else. I do think it's interesting, and I don't hate it, but I don't love it. So that's sort of my perspective on the move for Adolis Garcia. And if they can untap any of what he was in 2023, that would be absolutely super. But the move I'm much more excited about, frankly, is the Brad Keller move. The Phillies signed Brad Keller to a two-year, $22 million deal, $11 million a year. And he is somebody who last year for the Cubs had an absolutely unbelievable year. Like, pitched to a 2 ERA, ended up becoming their closer because Azalea got hurt out there in Chicago and their bullpen was really struggling for a while. Like, he saved that bullpen towards the end of the season and had an electric save against the Brewers in the NLDS there. And I thought really, you know, was a huge year for him. And somebody who, what I like most about him is that he feels like he's an ascending arm. And I think it was interesting that on the same day, Brad Keller signs for $22 million with the Phillies, and you have Luke Weaver going from the Yankees to the Mets on the same type of deal. And to me, I'm always a fan, and Jack Fritz was the one who mentioned this on his podcast, High Hopes, and I thought it was a really good point. He said that Brad Keller feels like an ascending arm, somebody who's growing into a really good reliever, was a starter to begin his career, was a pretty, you know, boring pitcher in terms of arsenal, threw a low 90s fastball, didn't have, you know, a ton of secondary pitches that a normal starter would have. And Luke Weaver is a guy who last year and the year before took on a huge workload and really started to sort of come apart towards the end of last year. And look, he's had a couple of really good seasons in the Bronx, but I feel like he's more of a descending arm in terms of somebody who, similar to Jeff Hoffman after his tenure with the Phillies, like, he's obviously coming off of a couple of years of huge workloads and is somebody who has had success in the past, but you're not sure how much better they are going to get or if they've reached their peak and are on the decline. With Brad Keller, it feels like you could get a really good couple of years out of him here. And from his time in Kansas City up until now, like, he has continued to get better, grow as a pitcher. And if you look, I'll tell you right now, if you look at his Baseball Savant page, there's a lot of red there. And if you, you know, are a typical Baseball Savant, you know, observer, you will know that that is always a good sign. And he's somebody whose velocity has continued to grow. Clearly, when you're coming out of the bullpen, as opposed to being a starter, your velocity is going to get a little uptick. And what's cool about him is he throws like three different fastballs and, yeah, obviously all of different type of movement. Like, the spin on his fastball is really impressive. And I think that coming out of the pen, that's the thing where if you have more than two pitchers and you are a former starter, then that becomes something that's pretty unique. And for him to have that starter experience in his background, I know a lot of people thought, you know, they gave him $22 million. Maybe they try to make him into a sort of a swing starter and be a bullpen guy. Like, Brad Keller was the closer for the Cubs as the season came down the stretch last year, and they ended up making the playoffs as the wild card team. So I think he's going to be the eight inning guy, the bridge to get to Duran. He is going to get the high leverage righties out, you know, for the Phillies this year. And I'll get to Matt Strom in a minute because he is on the trade block, and there is definitely a chance he's not a Philly come next year. So I'm going to talk about that. But if you give me Duran, Brad Keller, and Kirkering as your three righties out of the pen, and then you have what, Strom as of right now, Jose Alvarado, and Tanner Banks as your lefties coming out, like, that is a really, really good bullpen. It's probably a top three bullpen in the sport, if we're being honest, and we're, you know, starting the season right now. So obviously a lot of offseason to go still. Teams are going to make some moves here, but it's a pretty impressive bullpen. So I really like the Brad Keller move. I know a lot of people will see that he was a failed starter and that he struggled in Kansas City, but really only had a good year last year and was his first, I guess, true bounce back year. But I think what you saw last year gave you a lot of reason to think that this is a really good signing for the Phillies. And it's one I'm pretty excited about because it feels like maybe for the first time, they might not have to make a move at the deadline to get another relief pitcher, because that has clearly been a theme over the past couple of years. And frankly, part of the reason I'm, you know, a little disappointed with the Adolis Garcia signing is that it feels like they're going to have to do that again this year. And a big part that I did miss with the Garcia signing, by the way, is that Dave Dombrowski said that the outfield is pretty much set, which, just to bounce back to that really quickly, I don't love, which you're going to have Brandon Marsh out there in right field, presumably, or out in left field, presumably, and Adolis Garcia in right field, and Justin Crawford trying to man down center field as he is in the big leagues for the first time here, which I was more of a fan of getting Justin Crawford up here as a corner outfielder and giving him some time to sort of grow defensively, but they're probably going to end up throwing him into the fire here and being the center fielder. And I would still, in an ideal world, love for them to bring back Harrison Bader and then maybe try to move off of Brandon Marsh and make a trade and bring in, you know, another bat in here to potentially help out. Or you go out and you sign Harrison Bader after you trade Brandon Marsh and you run an outfield of Justin Crawford, Bader, and Adolis Garcia, which I would love. And it does feel like Harrison Bader wants to come back here. And maybe that was something Dave Dombrowski said to sort of say, look, like, you know, either bring your number or bring your years down, or we're not going to be able to make this happen. And I just think that adding Bader to this outfield would give fans something to be excited about in terms of the opening day outfield. Because if they roll out Marsh, Crawford, and Adolis Garcia on opening day, that it doesn't feel like a World Series outfield, if I'm being honest. So that's where I'm at with that. That's where I'm at with Brad Keller. Again, very excited about that move as well. So one other thing I wanted to touch on was the Matt Strom thing. Because with Matt Strom, Jeff Passan reported in his mid-off-season sort of column or analysis piece that he wrote on ESPN saying that the Phillies are looking to get off of Matt Strom. He is making $7.5 million. And I think that might be something that relates back to Dombrowski's end-of-the-year press conference and him saying that, or essentially implying the team was pretty annoyed with Matt Strom after the whole PFP comment and saying that, you know, we practiced them, but Matt Strom did not practice them prior to the postseason. So it feels like they've probably reached the end with Matt Strom, and they potentially get off his $7.5 million, which isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. And look, I do think that this bullpen and this team overall is probably better with Matt Strom on it, and that he is, and Jeff Passan said, he is the best lefty reliever on the trade market right now, and the teams will be, you know, definitely very interested to try to get Matt Strom, which, again, based off of his production over the past couple of seasons, I think plenty of teams would be in the market for Matt Strom. So I'm interested to see the type of return that they're looking for. It feels like it could end up being prospect capital as the return there, and maybe, obviously, they traded, what's his name? Of course, I'm forgetting his name now. Eduardo Tait in the trade for Joan Duran last year. Maybe they're trying to get a new catching prospect, given the fact that if they bring back JT, he would be somebody that, you know, is an aging catcher, and you don't have another catcher in the system. So maybe that's a route that they go down, but definitely interested to see the route they go with the whole Matt Strom thing. Because if you get off him and then say you can get off Alec Boehm, then is when you free up, say, $17.5 million based off the two of them, with Alec Boehm making 10 and Matt Strom making 17.5, And that's when you can hop in and say, look, maybe we go after a Bo Bichette or we go after an Alex Bregman and try to lengthen this lineup out. Then if you get a Bo Bichette or a Bregman, you slide them into the four spot and you move Adolis Garcia down. And then I think that's a lineup that a lot of people will feel confident with. Because if you add Bo Bichette or Alex Bregman, both solid right-handed bats, although Bregman is a little more power, Bichette a little more contact. If you add either of those guys to your lineup and put them behind Bryson Schwarber, I think a lot of minds would change around the city in terms of the whole run-it-back notion. Because that is a team, if you add that, you add Adolis Garcia, you add Brad Keller to the bullpen, like those are serious changes in the offseason. I think people are ready to be done with Alec Boehm, and I think I might be too. So if you're able to get off both of those contracts and free up $17 million next year in space on the payroll, I think that opens up a whole world of possibilities, and I think that's something that they could definitely be interested in. So don't know if teams are going to be lining up for Alec Boehm, but I think they definitely will for Matt Strom. So that'll definitely be something to monitor within, I would say, the next few weeks or so, because Bo Bichette would be someone who I'm really interested in. And I think that if you're bringing in one of those guys, you're probably not bringing JT back, which means you're going to be in the market for a catcher. Ryan Jeffers has been a name that I've brought up a couple times from Minnesota. Seems like Minnesota was basically selling off everyone last year, and why have them stop now? So I think that if you're going to bring in one of those big bats, which I would, like, you're also saving the money by not bringing back JT on, let's estimate, is probably a $15 million a year salary hit there. So I think that opens up some possibilities for you to bring in one of those bats and really make the lineup a little bit better. Because I also think that the catching spot is sort of one of those positions where, you'll take whatever you can offensively. And clearly JT in the year 2026 isn't going to be 2021, 2022 JT Realmuto. So I think that ultimately you would be upgrading lineup-wise, and that upgrade in the lineup would be more important than what you get defensively or with the pitching staff out of JT. But he does command a pitching staff very well. Clearly, they've been one of the best pitching staffs in baseball over the past couple of years. So credit to JT there, but I do think that from an offensive perspective, they could really use one of those two guys. And then you can sort of move off of Alec Boehm if you bring in a Bregman, or maybe they move off of Bryson Stott if they bring in a Bo Bichette, who said he would play second base. I haven't seen a ton of things, or I haven't read a ton that says, or anything, frankly, that says Bo Bichette would play third base, but I guarantee that he could, and I would be very interested to see if they pursue one of those guys who ends up, potentially leaving, whether it's Boehm or whether it is Bryson Stott there. So definitely some interesting things as the offseason rolls along, and definitely want to monitor both of those situations because I think that they would be both huge upgrades for this lineup and would get people excited as well, which is important going into next season. So one thing I want to touch on, definitely want to talk about before I get out of here, is definitely a little in the weeds type of move that happened on Wednesday, but something that I think definitely is going to have an impact on the organization. Somebody behind the scenes that has done a ton of work for just the club over the past few years under Dombrowski, and that's Ani Colombi going to the Washington Nationals as their new general manager at the age of 31, which is pretty crazy. Like, I know the Nationals, I read something today that their manager, general manager, and new president of baseball operations, who they're like calling the next Theo Epstein, and all three of those guys are under the age of 35, which is pretty incredible. And obviously the Nats are going for a new movement as they got off Mike Rizzo, and a lot of changes happening in the Nationals organization. Mackenzie Gore is still on the trade block, so definitely could be another little rebuild here for the Nationals. But it feels like they're getting a good group of guys together to do that. And Ani Colombi is somebody that has done a ton as the director of research and development for the Phillies over the past few years. And he's done a lot of the, I think, fringe type of moves that have really affected the ball club in a positive way. Because I think the big thing with Matt Klentak is he sort of transitions or turns into what I feel like a lot of Phillies fans thought about Ed Wade. Like, Klentak brought in Bryce. He brought in JT. He brought in Wheeler. He brought a lot of different guys like that. So I think that he brought a lot of those marquee names here and guys who were stars, that Segura, another one, like a trade that he made. He brought in a lot of those guys via free agency or trade that ended up being, big contributors on the team and still are. But I think where those teams, like the 2019, 2020, 2021 Phillies, where they really struggled was the fringe sort of end of the roster type players. And I feel like once Ani Colombi got here with Dombrowski, that was sort of rectified. Like, I think he was big in making like the Edmundo trade and making the move for Gregory Soto for Moises Chaussé, who's flown up the prospect rankings for the Phillies since he's got here. I think there are some of those interesting moves that have really contributed to the Phillies' success over the past few years and have been a big reason why they've won two straight National League East titles. And I think that's somebody that they're going to miss. And it's somebody where they brought a sort of a new school, fresh approach to things. While Dave Dombrowski obviously makes the big moves of getting Kyle Schwarber and getting Nick Castellanos and making the Duran trade. Like, that, those are Dombrowski moves. But doing the smaller little moves that maybe fly under the radar a little bit, I think he had done a really good job of that with the Phillies. It was just a really smart baseball mind overall. So I think that I'm interested to see how they replace him and how their sort of scouting department and all that type of stuff sort of transitions from here. But I thought it was a great hire for the Nats, and congrats to him. But I think it's going to be somebody that the Phillies end up really missing in the front office there. So definitely going to be on the lookout for who ends up replacing him or if they just transition that into a new type of role with somebody else. And obviously also Preston Mattingly being a young, up-and-coming, really smart general manager in the game as well. I would expect him to probably have, you know, a number of candidates lined up potentially replace him in terms of the research and development and somebody to fill in for him there. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Want to thank you, as always, for tuning in. A lot of exciting stuff this offseason and as the offseason continues, because there are still a lot of names out there connected to the Phillies, guys that I think could really fit this team well, and ways they can shed salary with the Strom, with the Bohm thing. So going to be monitoring that, but thank you as always for tuning in for Phillies 24/7. This has been Justin Morgenstein, and have a good one, everyone. We'll see you.